know she'll be the death of me. At least we'll both be numb, and she'll always get the best of me. The worst.
Hello, everybody. I am Buck with the RubberChickensBlog.com, and welcome to the Gamecock Flashback, the latest in our series where we review every Gamecock football since 1987, which just happened to be my freshman year at South Carolina. And oh man, we are up to 2015. Where to begin with the 2015 season? You know, this season really deserves a three-part documentary more than it reserves it deserves a podcast treatment, but I'll do the best I can here. To understand 2015, you really have to take a look back at how 2014 ended. Because that had a significant impact on the way the 2015 season would unfold. As you recall, 2014 was a big drop-off from the previous four seasons, which saw unprecedented success for the Gamecock program, an SEC East title in 2010, followed by three straight 11-win seasons and three straight bowl wins. The 2014 squad blew several late game leads on the way to a frustrating 6-6 regular season finish. We did rally to cap off the season with a bowl victory over Miami, which Steve Spurrier would say re-energized him after a difficult season. So heading into 2015, the Gamecocks really only had two bona fide playmakers, one on the offensive side of the ball in Pharaoh Cooper, and Sky Moore on defense. And really, Cooper was the only one who was getting any kind of preseason love. Even so, the predictions weren't necessarily dire for the Gamecocks, but for the most part, we were being viewed as a 500 team again. And Steve Spurrier took notice of some of the comments that were being made about him being too old or not recruiting well. And on July 22nd, called an impromptu press conference and went on a bit of a bizarre rant about his future at South Carolina, saying the following, among other things, and I quote, "We were 11-2 and ranked fourth in the country this time a year ago, and nobody said a damn word about my age. Now, a year later, I'm suddenly too old and we're on our way down. I just want our fans to know that we're going to have a good team and recognize that it's our enemies saying these things about Spurrier being washed up and we're not going to be heard from again. Gamecocks out there need to know I'm going to be here 5 or 6 more years, and away we go." End quote. He used the word enemies multiple times throughout that rant, and so it became known as his enemies speech. And I'm not going to lie to you, I enjoyed it. I got a good chuckle out of it because it was vintage Steve Spurrier, but I also kind of believed him. I didn't necessarily believe he was going to be around for 5 or 6 more years, but I did believe he was fired up and thought we might have a pretty good team. So fast forward to Thursday, September 3rd, and the opener against North Carolina. I think it was a game pretty much all of us thought we would win simply because the Tar Heels are always average as grits, but at the same time, it wouldn't have been a shocker for us to lose. And let's be honest, this was a pretty terrible football game. We were breaking in a new quarterback, Connor Mitch. And here's the thing about Connor Mitch that always concerned me. And if you listen to our podcasts, I think I mentioned this several times. Spurrier never talked about Connor Mitch when Connor Mitch was backing up Dylan Thompson, which is really odd. You know, when Tommy Beecher was around, he talked about Chris Smelly. And when Chris Smelly was around, he talked about Steven Garcia. When Steven Garcia was around, he talked about Connor Shaw. When Connor Shaw was around, he talked about Dylan Thompson. You know, he always said the backup guy, you know, we need to get him a couple of series here and there. We need to get him in the game. And Spurrier never said that about Connor Mitch. And that kind of always kind of concerned me that maybe Connor Mitch wasn't quite as good as his 4-star rating coming out of high school. And this night, Mitch wound up going 9 for 22 for 122 yards and looked very uncomfortable doing it. We needed two interceptions in the end zone by Sky Moore and a 48-yard TD run by none other than Sean Carson to hold off the Tar Heels 17-13. Our porous defense from 2014 was now a bend but don't break defense, and I personally did not feel great about that. Surprisingly, North Carolina went on to win 11 straight games before losing in the ACC championship game, But towards the end of the season, most people were saying, how in the world did North Carolina lose to South Carolina? But we got that win, and we needed it. We needed it bad by the time the season was over. Second game of the year was our home opener against Kentucky. Early on, we had an interception by Sky Moore that led to a short touchdown run, but those were the only points we would score in the first half, while Kentucky ran wild and held a 24-7 halftime lead. Connor Mitch left the game with a shoulder injury that would essentially end his career at South Carolina, and walk-on Perry Orth led a second-half comeback, which had the Gamecocks within 24-22 and trying a two-point conversion to tie the game. Unfortunately, Pharaoh Cooper fumbled on the play, and Kentucky returned it for a two-point conversion and a 26-22 lead. We'd get the ball back and have one more chance, but another Orth interception, or maybe it was his first interception. Maybe it wasn't another, but Orth threw an interception that basically ended it. And I remember writing after that game that I knew Spurrier was done, that his retirement was imminent. Maybe not during the season, but this would definitely be his last year at South Carolina, because it was just not looking good. It did not look like, from a talent standpoint, he was going to be able to get it done to turn this team around. And as we went to Georgia the following week, my fears were only confirmed, because we had a horrendous defensive effort and were blown out 52-20 by the Bulldogs. Georgia quarterback Grayson Lambert, who eventually would prove to be quite terrible, set an NCAA record by completing 24 of 25 passes for 330 yards, and we were simply manhandled in an embarrassing loss to the Bulldogs. Fortunately, we came home to host a horrible Central Florida team that was 0-3 and had lost to Furman the previous week. We thought this would be a breather, but we're actually losing at halftime to a team that would eventually finish 0-12. And that halftime would prove to be a pivotal moment in USC history, as Steve Spurrier later told us that during that halftime, he pretty much decided he was done. Fortunately, we rallied in the second half to win that game 31-14, mostly on the strength of a really encouraging performance by freshman quarterback Lorenzo Nunez. That's Nunez with an N-Y-E in the middle. Next game was Missouri. The team would travel to Missouri, and man, what a week that was in the state of South Carolina, and specifically the city of Columbia. I'll tell you a little bit of a personal story. That was the weekend of the semi-annual TRC fishing trip. So we went down to Fripp Island Thursday of that week, even though Hurricane Joaquin was off the coast. The storm really wasn't threatening the coast, but we knew there was going to be a lot of rain, but we had planned this for months, so we decided to go because we didn't have anything better to do, so we figured we'd just go down. If it rained, we'd relax and watch some football. So we were there on Thursday and Friday. Actually went out and fished a little bit on Friday. Didn't rain for a period of time, but early Saturday morning, we decided to head to G-Man's house in Columbia. Not because of the rain and wind, but because the cable was out. And we did not want to sit around that house all day staring at each other, wondering what was going on in the football games. So we got back just in time to watch South Carolina and Missouri, which, again, was just a terrible football game played by two pretty bad teams. I won't even go into detail on this one. I will mention that Nunez was injured in that game, and that affected our quarterback rotation pretty much the rest of the season. We got to watch Alabama spank Georgia that day, that afternoon. That was nice, but then unfortunately ended the night watching Clemson beat Notre Dame. The next morning, G-Man woke us up about 6 a.m. and said that the lake he lives on had risen as close to his house as we'd ever seen it, and so T-Bone and I bolted T-Bone to Greenville, me to Atlanta. And someday, if you ever see us or meet us, we'll tell you the long story, but we barely made it out of Columbia. And I got home to Atlanta and saw the devastation on TV. It was pretty rough. It was kind of hard to believe what we were in the middle of when we were in the middle of it. And thank goodness we got out of there, because nobody wants to spend a week at the G-Man's house. Just trust me. Not because of his lovely family, but just because of the G-Man. There, I said it. So the next week was scheduled to be a game against LSU at home, but it was evident early the next week that there was no way Columbia would be in any shape to host a football game. There were rumors it would be moved to Atlanta or maybe Charlotte, but ultimately the powers that be decided it would move to Baton Rouge. So our home game against LSU would be played on their field. Considering the week that everyone had been through, we really didn't play that poorly in the first half. We were only down 17-10. But Leonard Fournette of LSU busted off an 87-yard touchdown run, and that was followed by a tipped pass that fell into the hands of an LSU receiver for a 62-yard touchdown. And that was pretty much all she wrote for that game as we dropped our home game in Baton Rouge to LSU. So, a couple of days later, as if the South Carolina community hadn't been through enough over the previous 10 days, the events of the next week would really shake the Gamecock Nation to its core. On the evening of Monday, October 12th, which happens to be Buck's birthday, and 2 days after the LSU game, rumors began to swirl that Steve Spurrier was going to retire and leave the program immediately. I and we at TRC had been advocating for Spurrier to retire for a few weeks at this point, but I truly did not expect him to finish out. I did expect him to finish out the season and was pretty stunned when he said he was walking away immediately. I really wasn't mad at Spurrier at the time, and I'm certainly not mad at him today. I wish it had ended differently, but the fact is Spurrier is going to do what he wants to do when he wants to do it and really doesn't care what we think about it. I genuinely do believe that he was doing what he thought was best for South Carolina football, so I'll give him that. In steps Sean Elliott as the interim head coach. It sounded like it came down to either Elliott or G.A. Mangus, and ultimately it was Elliott, a guy who made it clear that he wanted a shot at the full-time head coaching gig, and he would get his audition started at home against Vanderbilt. And it was obvious from the beginning of that game that he wanted to make his mark on the program, although he paid a little tribute to Steve Spurrier when they came out of the tunnel by holding up a Carolina visor, holding it up over his head. And I get the tribute. Spurrier gave Elliott his shot at South Carolina, and that was something Elliott wanted to do to honor Spurrier. I just felt like that whole thing seemed a little forced and awkward. Then they showed videos, or maybe prior to that, they showed videos of Elliott getting his linemen fired up out there by pushing them, and they pushed him back. And honestly, that kind of thing is just not my taste, at least for a head coach. He can be our O-line coach all day long and do that kind of stuff, but the head coach has got to show a little more professionalism in my mind, and that's because I'm an old curmudgeon. The team also came out in black jerseys and black pants, which is a big deal and is fairly rare. But none of these histrionics really did the team any good as we were behind 10-6 midway through the third quarter to Vandy, and things were not looking good. Thank God for Pharaoh Cooper, who had another great season and who at that point of the game took a quick peri-orth slant and turned it into a 78-yard touchdown. From there, the defense clamped down. We tacked on a couple of field goals for a 19-10 win. Actually had good performances by Perry Orth, 17 of 28 for 272 and a touchdown. Cooper had 6 catches for 160, and Brandon Wilds ran 24 times for 119 yards. So, yes, it was Vandy, and yes, it was an unimpressive win. But, you know, after the couple of weeks we had, it was just nice to get a win and be able to smile a little bit. From there, we moved on to a really tough stretch of games. Honestly, the next 3 games were not games we were expected to win at this point. We were playing on the road at Texas A&M and Tennessee and then coming home to face Florida. None of these teams were among the elite in the country, but they were certainly better than us. So the expectations were low for those 3 games. Starting at Texas A&M, we continued a South Carolina tradition of taking a good football player and making him look great. That player was quarterback Kyler Murray, who was getting his first start for the Aggies. And all Murray did was pass for 223 yards and rush for 156. He would basically do nothing for the rest of the year after the South Carolina game and would end up transferring to Oklahoma. So at least we were able to provide him with some solid game film as he was looking at other schools. As for the game, you know, it was a really good game. Aside from not being able to contain Murray, we played better than expected. Texas A&M was an underachieving group, but still had tons of talent. And there were no field goals in this game, none at all. And the scoring went like this. They scored, we scored, we scored, they scored, we scored, they scored, they scored, and then they scored again on an interception return for a touchdown. And then we scored late in the third quarter, and that was it. The final score was 35-28. A good effort for the Gamecocks, but a loss nonetheless. Next up, we traveled to Tennessee and just got off to a horrendous start. The Vols scored two quick TDs in the first quarter, added a field goal in the second, and were up 17-0 before we got on the board with a field goal just before half. The second half was a much different story. We rallied to tie the score at 17, tied it again at 24. Tennessee kicked a field goal and had a 27-24 lead when the Gamecocks were driving. Late in the game, we hit a pass to Jarrell Adams that would have put us into field goal range and would have given us 2-3 shots to win it with a TD, but Adams fumbled fighting for extra yardage. The Vols recovered, and that was the end of the game. I can't help but think, you know, Jarrell Adams didn't have any, he was a solid football player. He's in the NFL now. At least at this recording, and I can't help but think of Jared Cook when I think of that play. As good a player as Jared Cook turned out to be, and he's having a really solid NFL career, he'll always be remembered for that dropped pass against Auburn, and I'm afraid Adams will always be remembered for this fumble against Tennessee. But let's hope not. But next up was Florida. And Florida, under first-year coach Jim McElwain, was 8-1. They probably weren't as good as their record, but, you know, who am I to judge at this point? Sean Elliott had the Gamecocks come out in some wild new white helmets with black face masks and the Gamecock tail feathers emblazoned on the helmets. I made fun of them, saying that they showed Gamecock ass and nothing else, which they kind of did. But secretly, I actually kind of like those helmets. This game, again, terrible for over three quarters of play. South Carolina couldn't get anything going. Trailed 17-0 before Perry Orth caught a TD pass from Pharaoh Cooper. Yes, you heard that right. That got the good guys on the board. A side note, Orth got a really weak celebration penalty call for mildly throwing the ball down on the ground. It was a seriously terrible call. It looked like Orth was thinking about trying to spin the ball, but he didn't, so he just kind of dropped it, and the referee immediately threw a flag, and we got a penalty, but didn't particularly hurt us. On the Gamecocks' next possession, Orth returned the favor to Cooper. With a little less than 5 minutes remaining, USC was remarkably within 3 points, 17-14. On Florida's ensuing possession, they faced a 3rd-and-8 from their own 46, and it looked like we were going to be able to get the ball back with a chance to either win or tie that game. But the Gators hit us with a trick play, a dive straight up the gut for 53 yards. About as simple a play as you could possibly run. Kelvin Taylor would take it in on the next play to put the game away, and the Gamecocks had lost their third straight heartbreaker. But fear not, Gamecock fans, there's good news. The Citadel was coming to town. So it appeared USC was going to finish 4-8 because obviously we'd get a win over the Citadel from the football championship series, formerly Division I AA. And then we'd probably drop our finale to number one ranked Clemson. But the football gods had other ideas. Not going to go into detail about this game because I don't want that, and you don't want that. The American people don't want that. Let's just shut the door on the ugliest of chapters in the ugly book that was 2015. The only comment I will make is whatever tiny chance Sean Elliott had of getting the South Carolina head coaching job, it went away on that cold, overcast Saturday afternoon. That leads us to the finale, the game against Clemson. You know, what made 2015 so much more painful was the fact that Clemson went undefeated in the regular season and then made it to the national championship game, where they mercifully lost to Alabama. So they rolled into Williams-Brice with an 11-0 record, heavily favored. I actually told a Clemson coworker that I didn't mind losing. I was just really afraid this game could turn into a 63-17 type game, given the way Clemson's offense could move the ball. Fortunately for us, the game didn't turn out that way, but much like Tennessee and Florida, we dug ourselves a hole, falling behind 21-3 and then 28-10. But like those previous games, this team just kept fighting, and you got to give them credit. They really never did fold their tent during this season, except for maybe against that other team from Charleston. But we eventually pulled to within 28-25 early in the fourth quarter. And, you know, it was at that point I started thinking maybe, you know, just maybe. But, alas, we couldn't stop the Tigers and Deshaun Watson when it counted and fell by a score of 37-32. And that was it. The season was over. I had actually written after the Citadel game that this was the worst season ever, the worst Carolina football season ever. And I know from a win-loss perspective, we had 1-10 in 98 and 0-11 in 99. And yes, I lived through those. And yes, I was a season ticket holder. But there were minimal expectations for those teams. One of those was a Brad Scott on the way out team, and the other one was a Lou Holtz coming in with the cupboard bare team. So we had only realized some modest success in our history to that point. We had a 10-2 season in 84, only one bowl victory in our history, and never anything that remotely resembled sustained success. But to go from an SEC East title, three straight 11-win seasons, four straight bowl wins. You know, it was okay to probably have another 7-win season. A lot of people would argue everybody has one of those every once in a while. But to drop all the way to 3 wins, to have your coach quit mid-season, to lose to the Citadel, it was just, in my very humble opinion, the worst. It was the worst because we had seemingly turned the corner. We were seemingly a force to be reckoned with on a yearly basis. And to go from that to essentially the worst team in the SEC was just terribly disheartening. Meanwhile, the bumpkins from the upstate were playing for a national title. So just a rough, rough 2015 for the Gamecocks. But we have moved on. We hired Will Muschamp shortly after the season was over. And to this point, he has done everything right. Again, I'm recording this just about a week before the season opener for 2016. So far he's done everything right. He's tireless on the recruiting trail. He's represented our university well. We just have to see how things go once toe meets leather. So we'll see in 1 week against Vanderbilt. So that's going to do it for this episode of Gamecock Flashbacks. Thank you so much for joining in. I really do appreciate you listening to this terrible season review. I am Buck with the RubberChickensBlog.com, and go Cocks. Be in love. I can feel my face when I'm with you. But I love it. When I'm with you, but I love it, but I love it. Oh. And I know she'll be the death of me. At least we'll both be numb, and she'll always get the best of me. The worst is yet to come. All the misery was necessary. When what deep in love? Cause I know, girl, I know. She told me don't worry. I can't.
Don't worry about it. She told me don't worry.